short release, starting on time and hopefully ending on time. My name's Jeff Edwards, I'm the extension educator here in Goshen County at the University of Wyoming. Although my name pad wouldn't point that out today, I came unprepared wearing any extension paraphernalia. But today we have Dr. Art Barnaby and Dr. Dan O'Brien from Kansas State University. And hopefully you are all here for their marketing presentation, is that correct?
Marketing presentation.
Risk management houses?
Marketing, risk management.
Marketing and risk management?
Right.
Okay. No, this isn't about hoop houses, not today, or chicken tractors.
All right.
But we can do that some other time if you want to, Dan. So.
I'm going to start, yeah, okay.
I will just turn it over to you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. How many of you came last year, just out of curiosity? Because I know I've got three of you that came last year. This is obviously a different case problem, I'll tell you that up front. And the second thing is that we have, this is the workshop for those who've had limited experience with futures and options, as opposed to last year, which is the more advanced version. So that's a little bit of a change in approach this year. We're going to concentrate more on the forward contract than the put. And for those who like to write options and sell options, that's not part of the case study. If you want that, you have to come to the RAM 2 version of the workshop. As you can tell, I'm with Kansas State University. First of all, everybody has a marketing plan, whether you write it down or not. One plan is to sell everything at harvest. That's certainly one thing you can do. Where we're going to go today, we're going to do some introduction here. Dan's going to talk about markets and forward contracts, and then we're going to break out a case problem and allow you to go through and actually test these to see how well they work, and at the end we'll be able to see who ended up with the highest net income. So one of the options that's in the case problem is to sell everything in harvest. You can do that on your real farm, and you can do it in the case problem. That's one plan. Another one is to sell everything out of storage. But eventually, you've got to sell it. You can't store it forever. I've seen people try. True story. I was in Idaho, and this goes back a few years. And I walked in this room, and there was this farmer sitting in the back of the room reading the Wall Street Journal. He looks up at me and says, "Who's this Dr. Barry Flinchbaugh at Kansas State University?" Now, I'm six states from home, and I wonder how in the world would he know some obscure professor at K-State? So you don't answer a question like that, because you know it's something more going on here. So I said, "Why do you ask?" And he said, "Well, according to the Wall Street Journal, Dr. Barry Flinchbaugh at Kansas State University says what farmers need is a good kick in the butt." At which point my response was, "I got no idea who the hell that is." I get back home and I ask him, "How did you manage to get your foot that far in your mouth?" What would happen, and this is back in about 98, he was on a radio call-in program in North Dakota. And this farmer called in and he had 95, 96, and 97 wheat in storage. He had not sold one bushel of wheat in 3 years. Obviously, he didn't have a lender because they would have forced some sales because they tend to like cash. But what happened in the wheat market? Now, remember, diesel fuel was a buck. It went from $3 to what was then an all-time high of $7. Remember, diesel was a buck. And all the way back down to $3. And never sold a bushel. What was going on? When it got to $4, could he make a little money? Yeah, he could have, because you got to remember expenses were substantially lower then. But he didn't sell any. When it got to $5, why didn't he sell? Fine, it's going to go higher, yeah. And when it gets to $7, why doesn't he sell? I'm not letting that bunch of crooks at Cargill steal my grain. I'm holding for 10 and I'll sell it all. Yeah, of course it doesn't go to 10. Then it backs down to 6. Well, why doesn't he sell at 6? That's still very profitable wheat.
Lost a dollar.
Yeah, he'll recover. Yeah, if it'll just go back up, I'll sell then. And he rides it all the way down. If it'll just recover back up to where it was, I'll sell. And it just trended down in from that point on. So the point is, whatever your plan is, at some point, you got to sell it. Now, whether you flip coins, you know, the easiest way to do this, guys, what do you do with every job you don't like doing, like cleaning the toilets? You give it to your wife and let her make the decision. That's what I do. But if you're going to do it, you're going to have to do it at some point. Now, there are many different ways to sell grain. One is forward contract, and Dan's going to concentrate on that. And another way is put option. We're going to talk about that. There are other beyond what we're going to cover in this workshop. selling futures, which is a hedge, whole bunch of spread strategies, which we won't get into in this particular exercise. There's also government help, or has been in the past, ACRE program. Anybody sign up for ACRE, out of curiosity? Anybody do that? ACRE, it was essentially a put option on expected state revenue, and that was part of the problem, is that you had a pretty good size basis risk on it. ACRE is in play for 2012. We will probably run estimates on it again. Initially, it made no sense to sign up wheat in Colorado. I don't recall Wyoming, whether I run estimates on those or not. The reason is that Colorado had two bad wheat crops in its five-year average, and that pulled the guarantee so low you just weren't going to get any chance of collecting on wheat. But we'll probably rerun those right before sign up for 2012. You can sign up for ACRE in 2012. The SURE program is now defunct. There is no SURE program on the 2012 crop. The previous crop, you did have disaster aid on it, but the 2012 crop has no SURE program. Farmers who feed their grain, you got to have one or the other. You got to either have grain to feed the livestock, or you're going to have to go buy it if you don't raise the grain, and you're going to have to buy it at today's market price, not one that was forecast earlier. Point is, all marketing plans assume production. Every one of them. If it doesn't assume production, it's a spec plan. You don't need to own grain to trade the market. You can, in fact, the guys trading the market in Chicago don't even have a flower pot in their apartment, and it'd probably die if they did. So the fact of the matter is, every one of these plans assumes production at the end. Even the lowest risk thing you can do, which is buy a put option. What's the deal with a put? Well, the put is, I pay a premium for a put that guarantees me a minimum price, and if the price goes up, the put will expire worthless and I lose the premium, but I'll sell the grain for a higher price. That's true if what? If you've got the grain. If you don't have the grain, then you're worse off because you've still got all the production expenses, and now you've lost the premium on the put that didn't pay you anything on top of it. So they all assume production. Doing nothing is a decision. Doing nothing is a decision. I'm just not going to pay attention to any of this stuff. Well, that's a decision. The only way you can avoid this risk is don't plan. Because once you plant, you've got the production risk and you've got the price risk. The only question is, are you going to do something about it? And the only way to avoid it is don't plant. So this spring, when it becomes time to go plant corn, just lay on the couch until the urge to plant goes away. You'll be fine. At some point, though, your spouse is probably going to have enough and kick you out and tell you to get with it and stop being a baby and plant, right? Probably gotten used to it by now, but we've seen substantial increases in premium costs both on insurance and options. This is because the market has gotten a lot more volatile in the last two or three years. There are ways around that that go beyond what we're going to cover in this workshop. And if you really want to talk farm program, talk ethanol. I mean, that's where the money is. And so far, the corn growers have not been able to get the next mandate level increase. They've been trying to increase that. And the blender's tax credit and the import tax are gone. The other thing I was just reading on this, Brazil has been importing ethanol from us. And they are now putting government money behind trying to get more acres of sugarcane planted in Brazil so that they will import less alcohol from the U.S. So all those things come in on this ethanol. And to put that ethanol in place, we are now putting two Iowa corn crops in your gas tank. Two Iowa corn crops. Roughly 5 billion bushels. So it's a big number. Without it, that's how you would trade corn at the loan rate. And if you're a wheat grower, it's corn is holding it up, because if corn falls, there's enough wheat, the wheat price would probably fall too. The problem, if you drop wheat prices without dropping corn, is they'll feed up the wheat. The wheat will go into the rations. So that's what puts a kind of a floor under the wheat price. Understanding options and crop insurance will make it easier to make the adjustment. Yeah, you got options built inside your crop insurance, and they're substantially cheaper than they are in Chicago. The new insurance contracts that came out 2 years ago, they all have exactly the same yield guarantee because they all have the same price election. That's something that came out when they combined CRC and RA together. looking at how this worked, let's say I go down and I've got a board price of $6 and a cash price of $5.70, 30 under. I forward contract 10,000 bushels with my elevator at the $5.70 price, cash price. I'm fully covered because I now have all the price risk gone, and I have it backed up by a yield protection insurance contract that guarantees me 10,000 bushels. Now, suppose that your crop gets hailed out and they have a production problem in Iowa and the market starts going up. Let's say it goes to 720 board. What is, and your crop gets hailed out, what it happens at the elevator? Do they say, forget about the corn contract that you signed with them, or do they want something? Have you ever done this game before? You have two choices. You can either pay the cancellation penalty, which is roughly equal to the margin money that the elevator lost on this contract, or worse yet, you can buy the grain and deliver to the elevator. That's not a problem if there's grain in the area. But if the area is suffering from like a major catastrophe, freeze or something like that, or drought, and what I'm referring to is a 96 wheat crop in Kansas was a drought year, only 89 was worse. And as a result, there was an elevator, farmers always love to call me and tell me when I don't know what I'm talking about, and this was one of those situations. I said, you know, you can pay the cancellation penalty. This farmer called and said the elevator wouldn't accept the cancellation penalty. They wanted wheat delivered to them. We contracted for wheat, and we want wheat. The problem was there wasn't any wheat in the area because it was a drought, so in order to get wheat, you had to ship it in. If you have to ship it in and pay the trucking cost, that's a lot more expensive than buying your way out by cancellation penalties. So be sure when you sign forward contracts to check to see what's the out if, for some reason, you can't make delivery on that contract. Will they settle for the margin loss, or are they going to demand physical wheat or physical corn? Not the same thing. How does the revenue protection contract change this? Well, how it changes when price goes up is the coverage increases. So if it goes to 10,000, if it goes to 720 and I lose my crop, I'm going to get enough dollars to buy my way back out of that forward contract. I'm going to show you a hedge here rather than a forward contract, but they are direct substitutes for each other. It's just who's making the margin calls. Why would I use a hedge rather than a forward contract? Anybody have any ideas? Why would the hedge be better than a forward contract?
You get out of the hedge.
Pardon me?
In case the price goes up.
Well, you're stuck either way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess you would be on that one.
Yeah, you're stuck. You don't have to deliver grain. That's one. And so if you got an aflatoxin problem, for example, that's good. And it makes it easier to get out. What's another reason, though? The basis, you're locking in the basis. That's the big difference. Here you leave the basis open. Something similar to that is a hedge-derived contract that some of the elevators offer. Very similar. They're making the margin calls and they're leaving the basis open. Now, in HTA, the difference between that and a hedge is you have to actually deliver. But that's not the answer I'm looking for. Anybody can forward contract. Takes a real man to sell on the board. Now, do I have anybody in the room that's ever made margin calls? You have. Todd back here has made margin calls. Well, Todd, you're an expert.
No.
Yeah? If you make margin calls, you're an expert. Let me tell you about Todd. First time he sold grain on the board, what did he do? He goes, and he gets that first margin call. What's he do? Does he panic? No. He gets in his pickup truck. He goes to the local coffee shop. Walks in front of all of his friends and said, boys, I got a margin call. That sucker didn't bother me at all. I just paid it. And all of his friends are going, wow, Todd has gone off the deep end. I better get to my bank and get my financing in order because I know where I'm going to be able to buy a farm real soon. So now you get the second margin call, but now this time you can't talk to Todd. Third margin call, he's really angry. Fourth margin call, he comes home and he kicks the dog. And about that time, he gets the conversation with a spouse. And it usually goes like this. I want one of two things by 5 o'clock today. I either want you out of the market or out of the house. Don't care which. Just want it done by 5 o'clock today. The point is, I'm continually amazed at people that do hedging for the first time, for whatever reason, assume that don't really think about they're going to make margin calls. And the only way you won't make margin calls is you happen to pick the top of the market. Now, how often do you pick the top of the market? My observation, I'm personally much better at picking the bottom than I am picking the top. So, but nonetheless, if you go in there, you better go in with financing in order and a plan of how you're going to handle it. How long can I stand the pain? Is there anything I can do about that? Well, yeah, you can do things like cover it with a call. But here's the issue. When that price goes up, Todd's going to get a $10,000 margin call. Now, if I've insulted you because your farm's much bigger than that, just start adding zeros. It works the same way. If it gets to $1 million, it's the same story. And typically, Todd, I don't know your financial situation, but most farmers don't have the 10 grand, 100 grand, million sitting around the house. They have to go call their local friendly ag lender. And I know there are a couple of friendly ag lenders in the room. So usually you get the ag lender on the phone and the conversation goes like this. We got a problem. We got a margin call and we need cash today because if you don't get cash, the broker's going to sell you out and probably tomorrow then the market will not only drop, but it'll lock limit down for a couple of days in a row. Then they'll widen the trading margins and then it'll clear. And at that point, you're worse off because you've lost the margin money and you don't have the crop priced either and it's going down. Well, you're telling your lender this and he's practically having a heart attack. Not the young ladies here on the front row. I'm thinking old guy, you know, typical lender that you think about. And he's having a heart attack. You go, my God, Todd, I've already lent you the money for the seed, the fertilizer, the fuel and everything else. Nothing going on out there but the crop growing. I mean, are you going to Las Vegas and playing the tables? Where's the money going? At that point, you realize you got a big problem. You don't even hang up the phone. You just get in your pickup. You rush to town, and there's your ag lender on the phone, only now he's starting to turn blue. And you realize if you don't get him calmed down, you know what that means is going to happen? You're going to have to do cardiac massage and mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. And you might not want to serve some of these old bankers at that point once you figure that out. So it's best to get him educated. Well, here, right here, you got to say, look, yeah, that's what I get for listening to those guys at Kansas State. Those guys can't forecast nothing. I got this big margin call. Yeah, I sold the crop too quick. But look, over here, that crop is now worth $10,000 more than anybody ever thought it would bring. At harvest time, I will sell it for the extra $10,000. That will pay off your margin account. That will net me $60,000 plus the basis, brings me down to $57,000, and from there I take off my expenses. That's exactly what I thought I sold a crop the day I pulled the trigger. And of course the lender goes, wow, really glad you explained that to me. But then what do lenders really get paid to do? Well, I'm going to suggest they get paid to worry. And they're going to start to worry, what happens if that crop gets hailed out, froze out, wind, you name it, could happen. Well, the problem is, look over here on the insurance side with the yield-only guarantee. It's only insured for $60,000, but the crop is now worth, what, $67,000. He's got an asset to a lender that is collateral. That's what's going to pay off your loan. And he's got an asset worth $67,000, but it's only insured for $60,000. It's underinsured. That's the problem. Wouldn't make any difference if we were talking houses, automobiles. They don't want their asset underinsured. How does the RP contract change that? Well, when the price goes up, that coverage increases. So from a lender's side of the desk, this is about as good as it gets. I could make this margin loan with, and it's a short-term note because it, you know, it's going to all clear at harvest or maybe even earlier. You don't have to hold a hedge till harvest. In fact, at some point, if the basis comes back in line, it'd pay to pick up the futures position, close it out, and roll it over into a forward contract position if the basis comes back. I mean, because that's why you're doing this in the first place. And you may be closer to harvest, you're pretty well assured that you're going to have production to deliver, too, if that's the other concern. But anyway, I've got two sources of repayment. My primary source of repayment is the growing crop. It's a liquid asset. I can take a security interest in it. And I've got a secondary source of repayment, which is the insurance contract, a liquid asset, easily converted to cash, and I can take a security interest in it. It doesn't get a lot better than that, but it's not totally risk-free. And a couple things we don't have a lot of time to get into today, but one of them was the lack of convergence that happened on the futures hedges with the wheat 18 months ago. And just when you didn't think out, and that comes back to you don't really have a right to deliver. And I don't know if that problem's been completely fixed. We'll find out when we get a good wheat crop again. And the second one, of course, I didn't count on Corzine. Oh, or he allegedly, let me be careful because it's on tape. because I didn't see him do it. But he allegedly walked off with customer money. That's something you just don't expect to happen. And there were people that lost money in this. One elevator lost $15 million in Iowa that testified before Congress. Why aren't, I'm sure there's elevators out there who have lost a ton of money with this thing. Why aren't they telling everybody this problem that, you know, we got screwed? Well, you don't want to leave the impression that you lost a lot of money in your hedge account, because your customer may be concerned about delivering grain because they're worried about your check being good, and they're not going to want to store grain if they think you're on shaky ground. So this isn't something an elevator is going to want to go around the community if they got caught in this. You know, the one thing I object to is the news media called these folks investors, and they're really not investors. They're the same, no more than you are in a bank where you've got a checking account. It's virtually the same, except your account's not insured in this case. And they're supposed to invest in low-risk assets like AAA government bonds. Corzine, I guess, stretched that a little bit because the board came in and weakened the rule. Corzine, I guess, took it to the extreme and started investing in Greek bonds, Italian bonds. All those went south, and then this whole thing fell apart. Since then, the board has now changed it back. They changed the rule back. It's back to the safer investment thing that you can put those funds in. So I don't know that the board's totally at non-fault on this. But nonetheless, a couple of the risks we didn't know we had. The thing is, the insurance contract, they all have the same price, so they all have the same yield guarantee. The difference is in has to be due to price. In this example, 173 bushels, 80% coverage would guarantee 138 bushels. I've got last year's price in here, $6. It's $5.68 this year. And then there's a maximum price. Okay, I've got an expected yield of 188. I've got an APH at 173. So I've got a gap in the APH coverage here. Why would I get that? Well, because I can get zero yield on this end, but I don't get 300 on this end to make that a nice bell-shaped curve. So I have an APH, a 10-year average, for two reasons. One, if I've had any losses. And two, especially on corn, the yields are trending up. And so over time, you got old yields calculating the 10-year average. So your 10-year average doesn't equal the expected. Now, if you live on the Nebraska side of the line, there's something called trend adjustment. And that's what it's doing. It's moving this line closer to this line. If you're on the Nebraska side of the line, I haven't found any there are very special cases, and there are very few, where it doesn't pay to take that trend adjustment. I think everybody's going to take it. There's a few exceptions to that, and it gets into when they've got minimum yields as a report of multiple year losses. Do you know of some?
Well, I ran some figures on that in the last couple of weeks, and it looked like if the guy was on 7% RP and you took the trend adjusted yield, it raised his guarantee 4-5%, increased his premium about 40, and you could do the same thing just by taking it to a 75% level. It was about the same.
Okay, I've got an example here that will show exactly what's going on. It's mostly capturing more subsidy.
We did in western Nebraska, the county factor, okay, pretty small.
Oh, okay. Okay, all right. Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, I should qualify that. If you, let me get to it. I will. Anyway, the yield guarantee will happen right here at this location right here. Any yield below this triggers an indemnity payment, so it covers this portion of the risk with just a YA contract. If I raise 75 bushels, I've got an indemnity payment coming. As yields go down, the indemnity payment gets bigger, and the change in price has no impact, so does not affect it at all. The harvest price, which is a yield-adjusted Asian call. Now, what does that mean? It means the Asian means that it's settled on an average price. So it settles on the November average of December corn. In an option, it settles on a spot market. Whatever you sell it for that day is what it's worth, period. So it's an average price rather than a spot price. The other difference is that it's adjusted for yield, and that's the major difference. Options trading in Chicago are always 5,000 bushels. So at zero yield, if the market goes up a buck, and you bought a call in Chicago, it will be worth $1 at harvest time because the time value will run out of it. So it's worth exactly a dollar. And the call that's inside your insurance contract at zero yield is worth exactly a dollar. But as the yield starts to increase, the call inside your insurance contract starts to lose value, but the call in Chicago is still worth a dollar. Okay? And at this point on the yield curve, the call will expire worthless inside the insurance contract, but the call in Chicago is still worth a dollar. Okay? So in Chicago, if the price goes up, the dollar amount just increases. Obviously, you can't do 138 bushels. It has to be 5,000, but I did everything on 138 bushels. Okay? So now, in the insurance contract, I trigger at zero yield. See, the call is worth 139 bucks, the same as it is in Chicago. That's with a $7 price. But as the yield increases, see, my call loses value. It's only worth 20. And that's added on to the yield payment. So this is plus the yield payment would be your total insurance payment. What I'm doing is separating the insurance from the price portion. The put applies right here. Right here where the yield trigger point is. Now, looking at that, which one of those options would you think be the most expensive? One that attaches at zero yield or one that attaches right here at 138 bushels? Which yield's more likely? 138. Yeah, you would think this would be the cheaper option, but not the way USDA is pricing it. This turns out to be an extremely cheap thing. The put is incredibly cheap inside this insurance contract. Prior to 2002, you're looking at the person that did the rating on the CRC contract. And when I was doing the rating, I can tell you that put was a lot more expensive. So you got to be really happy that Art doesn't have anything to do with the rating anymore. Okay? But on the other hand, I think this is an incredibly good buy from the producer standpoint. And in fact, if you went to the next level, it's lower cost enough that you can actually buy it and turn around and sell it in the market and make money doing it. So beyond the scope of this exercise, but nonetheless, that's possible. Now, what's different about this put is just like the other one. At that point, a put in Chicago is worth a dollar. This is also worth a dollar. But as the price declines, that put loses value. The reason is the underlying yield contract pays the entire loss. At zero yield, the put expires worthless, and that's because you're getting paid completely from the YP contract, and the YP and the RA, or excuse me, the revenue protection will pay exactly the same. As yield goes up, it will also lose value. You can always produce your way out of a loss. You can always produce your way out of a loss. At this point here, at that point, we're going to calculate this strike price, but at that point there is where your deductible disappears in your insurance contract, and basically you just take your percent coverage times the 568, and that will give you the point on the yield curve where the deductible disappears. Okay? Now, in terms of the put, it has its maximum value right here at the yield trigger. Well, this is the Chicago put. Price has no impact on it. The other thing with the Chicago put is that you never get a value that's negative. Okay? Now, the put inside the insurance contract, it equals Chicago right here at the 139, the yield trigger point. They're the same. Now, as yield goes down, notice that the value of that put declines at zero yield. It will be zero. The other thing that's different as price increases is that the put will take on negative values. That's extremely important. The put will take on negative values. Your revenue protection, with the harvest price excluded, will pay less than a yield protection contract. The reason is that put will take on negative values when the price goes up. The easiest way to eliminate that, buy the harvest price. That eliminates the negative puts. You will never, ever, under any conditions, get a negative put out of this insurance contract if you buy the harvest price. Most of the contracts are written with the harvest price intact. That's the revenue protection, which has both ends of the price in it. And that's the way CRC was designed from the beginning. From an insurance standpoint, one reason I designed it that way was because I knew one of those options was going to expire worthless. So I didn't give you an option to buy one. Now, I like the way they're doing things now. I'd like to have the option to exclude the put. I wouldn't do it because I think it's priced so It's just the cheapest risk protection you're going to get. Now, the yield part may be overdone, but the put part, I don't think so. Anyway, this is the total payment because, see, you're getting both the put and you're getting the value of the underlying yield payment. So your total payment's not just what I was showing you. It's $834. So it's a lot more than that. Anyway, so summary here with 119 bushels. The yield contract pays $120. If the price goes up a buck, the yield the revenue protection, if you exclude that harvest price, will pay $1. So you cut your payment $119 by not buying the harvest price. It went from $120 down to $1. That's because it took on negative values. If you buy the call, which is the harvest price, that will never happen. That will never happen. RMA has been cutting rates and changing rates. And there were some changes here in Wyoming. This is cuts of 15 to 10% are in the blue area. The red area is places where they raised the rate 10 to 15%. And you see there are quite a few along that eastern Colorado border that they did raise. Some up here in South Dakota. Interesting enough, there's one county there in Iowa where they raised the rates, which just surprised me. In your handout material, you've got slides from other parts of the state, or other states, other crops, okay? Is that justified? Well, this is a 15-year payout of crop insurance, 95 through 2011, all buy-up coverages. And at this point, the total coverage, and these are ranked by total coverage, meaning they're the most important in their impact on the national book. Iowa is the biggest. And in that state, they have had a loss ratio over this 15-year period of 44 cents. On average, they paid in a dollar and got back 90 cents. Effectively, Iowa's gotten no subsidy on the premium subsidy over the 15-year period. Folks in Washington throw around this premium subsidy really loose. I don't think they've ever been on the other end of the table. Let me ask you this. If you've been through several years without claims on your insurance contract, that means you're writing checks for premiums. When you're writing checks for premiums, does that feel like a subsidy? If you're in Iowa, on average, you've written premiums for checks, premiums for insurance. You haven't collected any subsidy. Now, that's not technically correct because they have gotten, if this was a private rate, it would be higher. Why? Because in a private rate, you have to load in the expense load. There's no expense loading in this. This is strictly premium versus payout. And there's no catastrophe load in. If it was a private insurance market, you'd have to go to a world reinsurer, Lloyd's of London type of operation, pay them premium to cover that catastrophe load that's really being backed here by the federal government. So in a private market, you'd have to pay for the catastrophe load, and you'd have to load in the expenses to cover the power and the lights at the insurance company and the employees there, and then commissions for the agents. And agents took a pretty serious hit on their commission last year. But I'm talking to farmers this year today, so sorry. Now, on the other hand, you've got a place like Texas where over that same 15-year period, the loss ratio was 127. That means for every dollar in premiums, they paid out $1.27. Farmers paid in a dollar and got back $3. So the point being is if you're going to cut rates up here, you would think they would have to cut rates down here with some of these states that have loss ratios far above one. The targeted loss ratio should be about 88 cents. About 88 cents. Where does Wyoming come in? Well, slightly on the high side. You paid in a buck and got back about $2.30. The loss ratio is $1.05. That's a little bit on the high side if you reach a target of 88 cents, meaning the premiums are just a little bit low relative to the payouts. Now, the other thing you have to remember is these premiums have been changed and adjusted over that 15-year period. This is what actually happened based on what was charged in those years. With rates that are in place now, if you ran the same loss experience but with current rates, you may well get something closer to 88 cents. That is the target. Nationally, the other thing is, when you look at a state like Massachusetts, they got a much higher loss ratio than Texas. It's 173. Connecticut at 176. So they are way underrated, far more so than Texas. What's the difference? Well, the difference is they don't write any coverage there, very little. So it doesn't impact the national book. But a big state like Texas, if they got underwriting losses, that does impact the national number. But it's been pretty good. They're right at 77 cents. As I said, the target is 88 cents. So the insurance companies have made some money, to be honest about this. And moving on. The 15-year payout on looking at strictly Iowa. The last time they had an underwriting loss was 2008. You can have losses in Iowa. It was 120 in 2008. And when they have 120 loss ratio, with a big a share of book as it is, it has a major impact on the insurance companies and the national numbers because they're the 800-pound gorilla, okay? What caused that loss ratio? Pardon me? No? Pardon me? No? How about price? That was the big price drop. This is the best kind of loss you can have. You have a big price drop, and you're actually getting payments, especially on soybeans, with no yield loss. The beauty of that is you're getting indemnity payments, and it doesn't lower your guarantee next year because your APH is not going to go down. What's the worst loss you can get with crop insurance? Half a crop. If you raise half a crop and the price go up, you want the price to go down if you raise half crop because then your deductible disappears. But if you raise a half crop and the price goes up, you don't get an indemnity payment or it's very small. You owe the premium. Next year, your APH is going to drop, lowers your guarantee, and your rate per 100 goes up. Worst outcome you can get. These are these trend adjustments, and you can see there's big differences in size. Nebraska does have the adjustment. This is the average for the dry land, which I think has been very generous, quite frankly, compared to what they did on the irrigated side. This is Kansas irrigated. That's as little, 2.2 is a big number, but the 0.3 here doesn't amount to much. What this means is if you had a yield back 10 years ago that was 180, you take 22 bushels times 10 years and you add 22 bushels to that 180 number, and you have 202 bushels rather than 180. So you go back and calculate your APH again, and rather than have 180 in your 10-year average, you'd have 202 bushels for that yield, and you just go on down each year. On the other hand, if it's 3/10 of a bushel, that takes that 180 bushel and raises to 183. Time you put it into the 10-year average, it doesn't have much impact. And that's what you were talking about. If you've got one of these really low numbers, it doesn't do much good. And but if you're up in this 2-plus range, it can make a pretty significant difference. The other thing is farmers say you don't have a loan rate or effective loan rate because the price, the loan rate, the national loan rate is $1.95 on corn, $1.37 if you took acre. And so, if prices get that low, you're all bankrupt anyway, so you don't really care. But effectively, you do have a loan rate, and it's built inside your insurance contract. If you take 85% coverage, and that just makes the math easy, I've got 570 in there because I did this before that market was finally finished. It's the February average, which worked out about this. It's 568. But anyway, 85% of that puts you at 485. What that says, if prices on the board drop below 485, you would have claims with a yield equal to your APH. That's the point where your deductible disappears. And if it's 80%, you just take 80% times 568 and you'll get the number at the point where your deductible disappears. So in effect, it puts a floor under things, much like a loan rate. The difference is that where'd the loan rate target the payment? It targeted the payment to the person that had the biggest crop. An LDP payment, a loan deficiency payment, paid the most dollars if you had a bumper crop, paid nothing if you had zero yield. This targets the payment to the person with the average crop, to the average crop. What's the biggest difference, of course, is on the marketing loan, you didn't pay anything for the protection. So how much protection do you want if it's free? All I can get, right? And 10% more. Absolutely. On the other hand, with revenue protection, I've just showed you effectively, it's kind of a loan right there. The difference is you have to pay a significant amount of premium. Most farmers, as a result, don't buy the maximum coverage, which is 85%. Not a lot written at 85. But if it was free, I guarantee you, all of you would take 85 and ask for 90. Right? Absolutely. What is they charging for the put on an optional unit? This is in the Corn Belt. 3 cents a bushel. 3 cents a bushel. How do I get the number? This is on slide 67, and you may want to take this home and do your own, because you can figure out your own. This is the formula, and you can figure out your own premium cost. Because they all have the same price, that means they all have the same yield guarantee. Because all these contracts have the same yield guarantee, any additional premiums or payments have to be due to price, because they all got the same yield guarantee. It can't be anything else. It has to be price. So I get the revenue protection premium with the harvest price excluded, so I've just got the put in there. That's $17.84 at this location. Yield protection at this location that has no price in it at all is $12.74. The difference is $5.10. Divide by the guaranteed bushels, and that brings you to 3.3 cents a bushel. 3.3 cents a bushel. The call, or the harvest price, is equal to the revenue protection, which has both of them, compared to revenue protection with just the put in it. That's $30.37 at this location. The premium for the RP with HPE is $17.84. The difference is $12.53. Divide by 153, and the cost of adding the harvest price is 8.2 cents. That also eliminates the negative values in the put. Those options are trading between 50 and 60 cents, roughly 55 cents on the board right now. That's why I argue that's probably the cheapest protection you can get. Now remember, they are adjusted for yield. If I go to an enterprise unit, the price of that put drops to half a cent a bushel. I can go up to an 85 and pay a penny for it. This is a Great Plains irrigated corn example. A little more expensive, but not a lot. 2.5 for 80. At 85, it worked out to 4 cents a bushel, using the same math as I just showed you. Now, this is optional units. Actually, it's a little cheaper. The Corn Belt one was 3, and this is 2.5 with optional units. Now, if you go to enterprise units, you cheapen things up a bunch. Would I buy enterprise units? Well, I guess the answer is yes, because I do. What you need to think about is an enterprise unit, if your land is sort of similar and it's all similar type soil production, not far apart, and if your major risk is drought, for example, if you think it's going to get the whole thing, then the optional units doesn't add a lot. Now, in irrigated country, a lot of farmers want to stay with the optional unit, particularly because of the hail risk. And so a lot of times in this part of the world, you stay with optional units. But if I was a dryland wheat farmer in central Kansas, for example, all the land is similar. What's your biggest risk? Freeze and drought. It's probably going to get the whole operation, not just one field. And the other thing about it is I can buy those optional units back in the spring if I got a wheat crop. If the wheat crop is in the toilet, there's no reason to buy hail coverage. But if it's a really good crop, I can come back in the spring and buy private hail and essentially buy my optional units back. So there's two ways to look at that. This slide here shows the big differences between these options and the ones traded on the board. Higher prices cause this negative value. And as I said, the easiest and the quickest way to get rid of it is just buy the harvest price. So if you buy revenue protection, which has both options in it, you will never get negative values from it. But this provides a lot of downside protection. And of course, Chicago never has that. The big difference is these are adjusted for yield. You can always produce your way out of a loss. A big crop will eliminate any payments, even if the price drops a ton. These have no adjustment because they are 5,000 bushels. So this year, premiums are going to be cheaper. I would suggest, again, in a lot of cases, it pays to add the trend adjustment. What I don't agree with is taking the trend adjustment and moving down a coverage level. That's been suggested. I would stay at the same level and buy up on the coverage because you're going to max out your subsidy. That's what you're really doing here. But they're going to be cheaper regardless of what you do because the volatility dropped in the corn market from 29 to actually 22%. That was 23 a day or two ago. As it closed, it finished out at 22. Soybeans went from 23% down to 18. So all those premiums are going to be cheaper than they were a year ago. It's also going to be cheaper if you have a 568 because of the 568 price. Now the exception is if you're eligible for that trend yield, if you can, and if it's the trend is significant, you essentially can buy the same dollar guarantee as I had a year ago with $6 corn. I can buy the same dollar coverage this year as I did a year ago with $6 corn if I've got a trend adjustment that's high enough. And it's probably going to take something around 2 bushels to do that. Okay? Now, that's a tremendous buy in my view, because you're going to pay less for it because volatility numbers drop, even though you got the same dollar guarantee. Yes?
How do they calculate volatility?
Implied with a mathematical model based on where the premiums are traded in Chicago. And they actually get it, RMA gets their number from bar chart. And I track those numbers for a client. And that's where I go get them too. If you want to know the volatility number, bar chart is where they get it from. And if you want the volatility number, now if you just want the futures prices and the option prices, I think you can basically get that free by just going to bar chart. Just type in bar chart and you can get on their website. But if you want the volatility numbers, then you have to buy their service. And I think it's $200 a year is what they charge. It's similar to DTN, but they have a lot more option prices built into their website, and they do generate this volatility number, and that's where RMA gets its volatility number from. They're getting it from bar chart. Okay? Let me close here and turn this over to Dan. This is a chart of the 2012 corn market, and one of the things that came out, and Dan's probably got more to say about this, USDA came out in their February Outlook conference and projected 94 million acres of corn to be planted. Take 94 million acres of corn, plug in trend yield. If all that happens, I think it's fair to say we're probably going to see lower prices. Okay? Now, I am not totally convinced we're going to plant 94 million acres. And the reason I'm not is because I'm looking at this chart, and basically it's been trending down here, and here recently been trading sideways. At the same time, this is what soybeans has been doing. It's trying to bid soybean acres in over the corn acres. So I don't know if we'll really plant 94 million. I mean, we're going to plant a lot of acres in the Corn Belt, but when you get in the more marginal growing areas, maybe some of those acres are going to switch from corn to soybeans as a result of that. So I think a lot is going to depend in the next 3 months where we end up with the prices going into harvest. I wish I knew the magic answer to that, but and Dan's raring to go so we can stay on schedule. So if we could come back at 10, keep the break that short, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.